I'm Kevin Oostie, and on this episode of V8 Radio, I'm joined by our super fan, Mr. Mike Clark, once again, and we'll be discussing some of the cool automotive events going on this summer, a couple of neat happenings in the V8 Speed and Resto Shop, the status of Mike's GTO, the indoctrination of NHRA legend Dave McClelland into the NHRA Hall of Fame, some very cool breaking news on a super special guest and awesome car that will be at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals this November, and some other shenanigans right here on V8 Radio, brought to you by ARP.
ARP, the ultimate fasteners for the outside of your engine. Finish it off with ARP engine and accessory fasteners in chromoly or stainless steel when failure is not an option. It's ARP-bolts.com.
All right, so welcome back to another episode of V8 Radio. I am Kevin Oostie, joined once again by our super fan, Mr. Q-Ball, Mike Clark.
What is happening, Mike? Hey, I'm just living life, man.
There's a lot going on. It's a summer of a lot of activity, which is cool. Mm-hmm. By me, it's been very hot, very sticky, but the automotive events have been in full swing.
Oh, yeah.
Hot Rod Power Tour has come and gone, and I didn't go, but I heard a lot of reports that it was just miserably hot in the Texas tour this year. Did you see any feedback on that?
Actually, I haven't. I've been kind of just busy in my own little world. It was the last day of the Power Tour before I even realized it was going on. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even see anything going on with it. So shame on me.
Last weekend was the Street Machine Nationals in DuCoin, Illinois, which was another hot one.
Oh yeah.
And that's an interesting show because it's kind of the pro street mecca, if you will. You have a lot of the very famous pro street cars that were built over the years on display there. It's a good time.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I've been wanting to make that show. I gotta really make an effort to go down there. That sounds like something that's right up my alley.
So you've never been, huh?
No, never been. Shame on me.
Yeah, again. Well, not really. I mean, the Street Nats has an interesting arc of history, if you will, because it started off many years ago, and it used to be at this DuCoin State Fairgrounds, which is not the Illinois State Fairgrounds. That's in Springfield, Illinois,
right
at the Capitol. DuCoin's a very small town in southwestern Illinois, and what it used to be was basically 3 or 4 days of debauchery. I mean, it was a huge car show, lots of burnouts, lots of rowdiness, you know, parties and drinking and things going crazy.
Oh, geez.
And it got to the point where in the mid-90s, there was essentially more state police cars than there were participants.
Oh, my gosh. That's a problem when that happens.
Well, that's what had to happen. I mean, right. It was getting so ridiculous that finally law enforcement and the local officials said, look, we gotta put the lid on the pot here somehow. Mm-hmm. So then the event went away for a while, for many years, and it returned to DuCoin, I'm going to say 5 or 6 years ago now, with a whole new family-friendly take on it. And the funny thing is, a lot of the people that used to be the crazy ones, well, now they've grown up and they've got families and
right.
stuff. So it was the same people, just in a different stage of their life.
I gotcha.
But the one thing they were able to keep consistent is that really cool Midwest pro street scene, you know, and
sure.
some people dig that stuff and some people don't. But if you want to see it, that's where to go.
Yeah, I remember reading magazines like Hot Rod or Popular Hot Rodding when I was a kid, and the pro street, this is like, you know, late 70s, early 80s, and the pro street scene was huge. And you'd see these cars with these giant back tires and these wild graphics and these skinny front tires and look at that, like, my gosh, that's I thought that was really cool stuff, and always wanted to, you know, get up close to something like that. And then I liked going to like the Autorama in Cleveland, where I grew up, and you'd see a lot of these really wild cars out there, and it was really cool looking. So yeah, these street nats would be right up my alley. I'd really love to go sometime.
Yeah, and they used to do the one in Columbus also, in Ohio, which was a huge show. I guess the Super Nationals is what that one was.
Oh, yeah?
Again, another big pro street, you know, event. And that's where you'd see you know, Scott Sullivan and Rick Dobberton. And, well, I mean, the same crowd that's at DuCoyne, you know, I think it's a very strong Midwest kind of deal.
Right.
You don't see a lot of the pro street stuff on the West Coast. You do see it on the East Coast. But
sure.
And this particular year, we actually didn't go. We were going to be there with a car, and timing just didn't work out. And we ended up not going. But interestingly enough, a car that we had painted a couple years ago ended up being there. It's a local customer of ours that owns a Candy Brandywine 79 Trans Am.
Right. And,
yeah, and he's a fixture down there at DuCoyne every year.
Because that's right in your backyard, isn't it?
It's about an hour and a half away from us, so it is kind of a local reunion for us.
Sure.
But it was cool because his car got picked by the editor of Gearheads for Life magazine, one of the new Acceleration Media publications, to be editor's pick. And then they also won best paint in the Street Machine class. So they really did well with the Trans Am. So
that's a nice feather in your cap, huh?
Well, what's cool about it is, you know, we've got a tremendously talented crew that can put these things together. And the guy who actually painted that car is no longer with our shop. He moved on to different stuff. He came from a collision background and kind of went back to that. But we called him right away or texted him and let him know that his handiwork still stands tall today. And the biggest thing is that the customer, you know, they get the accolades because they've got the cool car. And that's what's fun. I mean, it's nice. Obviously, it's great for the crew to get a pat on the back.
Sure.
And the shop. But, you know, for me, for a customer to go out and take a car that you know, we worked on and have them take home some trophies, it means a lot to these people. You know, and it's funny because a trophy doesn't validate the amount of money or time you spend on a car.
Right.
But it doesn't hurt either. It's just kind of a nice thing to get the recognition from, especially such a talented crew like the people at the Acceleration Media Group.
Uh-huh.
Those guys, part of that team is Jeff Smith, who's former editor of CarCraft magazine and, you know, been at Hot Rod and all those magazines for a long, long time. And Sean Brereton and Todd Ryden, who's been a fixture in the industry for 25 years probably. So they didn't know that we built the car. They just saw this cool car and picked it. So it won on its own merit, and you know that was really cool.
That's great when it, like you said, when it does win on its own merit, and there's no you know, political undertones that influence somebody to say, oh, well, this is a car that Kevin's shop did, so I should probably vote for it, or blah blah blah. And you know they don't know that, and they say this car is cool as it sits. I like this car. That
absolutely
feels even better.
That's what it's all about. You know?
Absolutely.
And the car's got an interesting story. The owner and his buddy built this car the first time and drove it for a bunch of years with a Candy Brandywine paint job on it. And then it got wrecked. And it actually got wrecked at DuCoyne at that show
a couple years ago.
Yeah, it got rear-ended. So he brought it to us and said, look, can you guys straighten it out and repaint the whole thing? And it started out as a job where we were just supposed to fix the car, and then it turned into, well, let's take it to a whole nother level. And, and so we completely stripped it and regapped it and, you know, did the whole Candy paint job all over again and everything else. So
I hear
it's quite a project.
Yeah, I hear that Candy paint is really hard to do without get a stripey look to it. I mean, I hear it's just a really tough job, and it from the pictures I've seen, it just looks bloody dynamite. So, hats off.
Well,
to you guys.
And what we try to tell people that, I mean, a lot of people want that look, that Candy look, and it's challenging because it's very high risk.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, this car had, I think, when we shot it, it had about four layers of a gold base coat.
Oh, boy.
And then it had seven layers of the Candy Brandywine color. And then it had a clear also that had a slight tint, and it had some flake blended into it as well. So this is a full-on custom deal. And when you do a custom paint job like that, you have to mix all your material together. You know, so if you're going to use 2 gallons of color, you intermix those together so that they're consistent from one can to the next.
Sure.
Especially if you're going to put in a flake or a pearl or something else.
Yeah.
So that, you don't get halfway through and the front of the car sparkles more than the back.
Right.
And when the risk factor comes in, because as you're doing this paint job, anytime you spray one layer of color, for example, like you said, you're risking a paint gun pattern, a stripe pattern, or some kind of, inconsistency in the color.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also risking bumping into it. You're risking getting a hose dragged into it. You're risking a piece of dust or a piece of dirt.
Okay.
And the reason why you have these multiple layers of candy color is because every layer you put on it, it gets darker.
Oh, no kidding.
And the yeah, so it's not like a solid color where you put coats on for coverage,
right,
just to get a solid color. So if you're in, say, for example, you're going to shoot 7 layers of candy brandywine to get the desired color that you want, and you're 5 layers into it, and you bump into it, or there's a big piece of dust or something, you can't just sand that out and keep going, because right, you'll cut through the other layers and change the color.
Oh, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. So you really, once you start the job, you have to plow through to the end, and all these layers take time, and there's a flash time between each one that they got to dry a certain amount. The temperature's got to be right, the humidity and everything. And it's a long, long process, and a lot of work. So by the end, the painter can barely hold his arm up, hold the gun. and then whatever you got, you got. You can't fix it, per se.
Ugh.
And then you go back and clear the whole thing. So, it's a challenging, and that's the reason why they're so expensive, is because the materials are ridiculous. You use a lot of material. You don't put 3 colors, three uh-huh. coats of color on and call it a
right.
day. And then it's such a high risk thing that if something goes wrong, you're stripping the whole car again.
Yeah,
so
that's like live television, man. That's it. You got one shot.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So yeah, we were fortunate that that the body shop crew got the car super straight, and the painter did a heck of a job, and it buffed out real nice. And then of course our mechanical crew put the whole car back together, and those cars are also tricky. It's a T-top car, and it had all new weather stripping and rubber around the T-tops, and that stuff's kind of a nightmare to put back together and get to fit right and everything.
Oh, sure. Oh, my gosh. So, I had a 77 Formula that had Hurst T-tops, and this was in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, and there was no – I couldn't get weather stripping for it. For around the T-tops, and it just leaked like a sieve. It was the worst thing ever. And I just hear, even when they were brand new, they were pretty leaky.
Yeah. Yeah, the design wasn't super solid. The Hurst ones are very cool, though. I didn't know you had a Hurst T-top car.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I really liked it. I just kind of lucked into it. I was looking for a car, and I found this. I was still in the Air Force, and I was looking for a car, and I was walking down the street, and I saw this used car lot, and there it was sitting. I'm like, that's a pretty cool car. And so I ended up buying it. It was a fun car to have.
You said there was a 77?
Yeah, 77 Formula.
Was it an old 403 car?
No, it was a 400 car.
A Pontiac car, really?
Yeah, Pontiac 400 car, absolutely, yeah.
Was it blue?
It was blue. It was like a medium blue with a blue interior and automatic 400 4-barrel. It was a fun car to have.
It seems to me a lot of those formulas were blue in my mind for whatever reason.
It didn't have the formula graphics down on the rocker panel, though, on the lower edge of the door. But it was just a solid blue car with the formula scoops. And, what was great about the formula, it was just kind of it was a Trans Am without the hood scoop on it.
Did you have the big vinyl bag that you slipped the T-tops in and put in the trunk?
I didn't have the vinyl bag. It didn't have that. But they did fit in the trunk nicely.
Yeah. So that was a deal where you'd go somewhere, or you'd go out to the car. It's a nice day. You look at the sky. You pull the T-tops off, carefully set them in the trunk.
Yep.
And then if you're going to go cruising, if you didn't have the bag, you got to worry that, these things could slide around and smash into each other and break, right?
Yeah, I think I had a blanket that I put them on, just so they
crack
into each other.
And then you'd get somewhere and have to put the T-tops back on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to sit there and be nervous that nobody was going to steal them.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, the worst
Those were hot items.
Yeah, they absolutely were. I was hearing a lot that they would get stolen. Like, I think, some old Cutlasses have T-tops? And I think back in the, late 80s.
There was a lot of them. In the late 70s, the Cutlasses, the F-body cars, mm-hmm. in the 80s, the Buicks had them, the Cutlasses had them, the Pontiacs had them, the Grand Prix.
Yeah, they were a hot item to be stolen. I do remember that from way back when. Boy.
Corvettes.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, we don't think about that stuff. Yeah. You know, my dad was a police officer, and I remember him telling me back in the 70s and the early 80s, the street life of a new Corvette in the Chicago area, or I guess in the city of Chicago proper, was 24 hours.
Holy cow!
there was at one point, if you bought a new Corvette and parked it on the street in certain neighborhoods in Chicago, you had 24 hours before that sucker got stolen statistically.
Oh my gosh.
and that's what drove GM into developing that whole pass key system with the chip and the key.
I gotcha.
And you know, it's funny, we have a 77 Corvette in the shop right now, as a matter of fact, and it's a T-top car. Yeah, we do. We just did a whole custom console and all kinds of neat stuff
on
it. But it has the circle key alarm in the fender. Do you remember that? Those Chapman alarms?
Yeah.
So there you'd get out, and a Corvette's different because there's no room for the T-tops, you know, and you'd get where you're going, and then you'd put the T-tops on, and there was an optional circle key lock for the T-tops, and then you'd get out and walk around to the front of the car and put the circle key in the fender and mm-hmm. turn the key, and that would activate the motion sensor and the siren thing. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's outstanding.
stuff you forget about, you know.
I know. Yeah. That formula I had, it was my daily driver. It was my everyday car. So come winter time, and in the fall when it's raining all the time, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. I ended up put duct tape all around the top of the T-top so I wouldn't get wet every time I drove the damn thing. And then come summertime, it would just rip it right off. It, and here I am, I'm ready for summer cruising.
So you literally just duct taped the outside and covered up the seam. There you go.
Yeah,
that works.
Do what you got to do, right?
That's better than getting snowed on and dripped on and everything else.
Yeah, a nice budget-friendly temporary fix. You guys do a lot of F-bodies out there. I seem to remember watching a lot of the VATV video, quite a bit of Camaro and Firebird stuff. Goes on out there.
Well, I think what ends up happening is, I mean, we'll do anything.
Right.
We'll build a car and somebody will say, hey, I want one of those. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, we're doing another Camaro.
Nice.
And I think right now we've got 5 69 or at least first generation Camaros in the shop.
Cow.
Yeah. And we had 2 second gens in the shop. The good thing is, the crew knows those cars inside and out, so you know, we can, and we've taken them, you know, from absolutely nothing to some pretty high end cars. So
yes, you have.
Those they're fun to do. The guys I kind of feel for are the guys in the body shop, because a lot of times what they get to see is very similar over and over again. They get to see another 69 Camaro quarter panel. The crew in the front half of the shop, they get to maybe see a different engine driveline or a different, you know, suspension system or whatever. But the guys who are sanding on these, nah, it's kind of the same deal.
Yeah. Well, you think they're pretty good at it by now, seeing it all the time. So.
Oh, yeah. They certainly love them. But then when you bring something else in, for example, we've got a 1980 Dodge Murata in the shop.
What?
Yeah, you remember the Dodge Murata?
I think so. What? Oh, my gosh.
The early 80s, the Murata was similar to the Chrysler Cordoba and
the
300. And it's it's interesting how this stuff shakes out, because we never planned to, you know, we're not out soliciting customers to restore their Dodge Muratas. This is probably one of the least restored cars out there. You know,
I would agree with that.
Not a very high market value car, not super collectible. Mm-hmm. But our customer was in the service overseas in the 80s, and he was coming back to the States, and he bought this car brand new, and it's his car. He loves his car.
Wow.
And he has driven it ever since then and wanted a brand new one.
Wow.
And we told him, you know, you're going to invest far more into this car than you'll be able to sell it for. And he said, yeah, I know, but I'm never selling it. You know, this is my car.
Wow.
So that's definitely something different for the crew to work on.
Must be the rich Corinthian leather that really turned him on to it.
Yes. Well, this one's black with the, well, let's see, if the leather was Corinthian, you know, this must be Tuscan vinyl or something.
Oh, nice.
It's not quite the leather, but...
Hey, how about that Dave McClellan making it into the NHRA Hall of Fame?
How about that? How about Dave McClellan not getting into the NHRA Hall of Fame 30 years ago?
Yeah, that's a crime. That's a crime.
Right, and it's funny because I have been extremely fortunate to have worked with Dave when I was producing Hot Rod TV. In fact, Dave emceed my wedding, if you can believe that.
Really?
Yeah, he was gracious enough to fly out, him and his wife Louise, and hosted our wedding.
Wow,
and that was surreal. I mean, your wedding day is surreal on its own.
Sure,
but to hear, you know, the world's most famous track announcer introducing the bridal party.
Oh my God, I would love to hear that. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. It was mind bending. Yeah, so that was very cool. He's been a great friend of ours, and just a guy who, you know, the parallel I will say in other sports is kind of like a Harry Carey to baseball.
Sure.
Where you have one of the most famous and well-loved personalities who's not really a player, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's a perfect analogy. Absolutely.
Because you have, you know, your John Forces and your Kenny Bernsteins and, mm-hmm. and you know, all of your NHRA legends that, of course, deserve to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as people that, you know, didn't build engines or didn't physically go down the track, there's not really that many people that I think are worthy, but Dave, absolutely.
Totally is. I mean, generations of people have been listening to him watching NHRA and hearing him commentate on that. He is NHRA for crying out loud. So yeah, you're right. He should have been in 30 years ago. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, yeah, and just a regular guy who you know stops and talks to everybody. A tremendous memory and has one of the greatest perspectives on life. You know, in fact, it reminded me of a little story when we were shooting Hot Rod TV in the beginning. With Dave, it was a new production crew, and of course he was our new host, and we were trying to get this new show off the ground, and it was a high stress deal, you know, everything had to go right. And when you do those episodes, Dave would do what we call our host stand-ups, and introduce each segment, and then we would shoot all those at once, and we would try to do them in a different location if we could. And the first day was at the NHRA Museum in Pomona, California, and being the first one, we have a lot of people that don't know each other. We have a foreign, you know, it's not our home turf, being somebody else's facility. And we've got a lot of people standing around. And that's when things don't go well, you know. So we were having some technical glitches with lights or, you know, sound equipment or whatever. And Dave had some notes, didn't necessarily have a script. Because this guy, I didn't realize how much he didn't need a script.
Oh boy!
until shooting that, because we'd worked with other people who, you know, you put the lines on a teleprompter and you let them do their thing.
Right.
Well, in this case, we're setting up a shot, you know, and I forget what the actual segment was that he was introducing. For this example, you know, I'll say maybe it was an engine dyno session, you know, that we had shot a TV story on, and he's getting ready to introduce this. And we would tell them, okay, so here's this, you know, engine dyno thing, and it's got to be about 20 seconds long or 30 seconds long or whatever. Right. And he'd look around the room, and he would say, well, I'm standing next to the Stonewood's cooked gasser. Do you want me to incorporate that into the line? Or, you know, and it's like, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you do one, you know, clean, and then we'll do one your way just to, you know, for a safety so we have what we need. And he looked at me, okay, you know, whatever you want. And we'd count them down, 3, 2, 1, go. And it's like, hi, everybody. I'm Dave McClellan coming from the NHRA Museum in Pomona, California. Welcome to this episode of Hot Rod Magazine TV. I'm standing next to the world famous Stonewood's Cook gasser car that ran 852 at 147 miles an hour in 1967. And we're about to do a parallel universe comparison on a dyno very similar to what's under the hood of this car.
Wow.
You know, and then we'd
okay, you know, I think we got it, Dave.
Yeah. We look at the timer, the stopwatch is like exactly 20 seconds. And he'd say, how's that, son?
Okay, Dave, you're the boss.
Oh, yeah, this is your world, buddy. You know, I'm lucky to be standing anywhere near it. So from then on, you know, he and I had a great relationship because I know who's in charge here.
Right.
And he'd be like, you just tell me what you need and I'll get it.
Right.
And it's funny because a lot of, in the television world, a lot of producers are kind of power hungry, and they have to be controlling, largely because there's so much on the line. You got this crew standing there, and it's tens of thousands of dollars a day, and everything's got to go right. But I knew that if we just let him do his deal, we'd get a great show. So, you know, rock on. So there was never any conflicts, and you know, working with some other producers that would, you know, that's great, but you need to do it this way. You know, and that's when things start to get dicey, but we had a lot of fun doing that show, and his other famous quote to me that I never forget that I apply to everything now is when things were, you know, getting a little hairy, he would just lean over and say, it's just television, you know, it's not, nobody's going to die if we don't do this right.
Right, so. Right. Maybe people will get fired, but no one's going to die.
Yeah, it's not like dropping the scalpel during brain surgery or something.
Right, yeah, I get you. That is hysterical. How was that, son?
Yeah, right. As you hear me, you know, crumpling up the script and throwing it over my shoulder. Yeah, that'll do.
Yeah, okay, Dave. I think you've done this once or twice before. Okay, good.
Yeah. Oh, well, and you know, when I say that he wasn't necessarily a racer, he wasn't necessarily a competitor in the NHRA, but he is a racer.
Is he?
And he owned a drag strip, for crying out loud.
Really?
He got his start, I'm going to say back in 55 as a television reporter hanging out at a station in the South, and eventually ended up getting this drag strip and being a promoter and the owner of this drag strip. Hmm. And he's always had cool cars. He had a Fiat Topolino dragster that, you know, ran high eights, low nines or something.
Wow.
Kind of a, you know, set up more of kind of a bracket car that he just ran for fun. So he certainly walks the walk as well, but, you know, his talents were better suited in the tower than, you know, running a top fuel car. That's
right.
For sure.
Sure.
But again, you don't get a guy with that level of understanding unless he knows what it's like to go down the track.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point.
Yeah, his biography is pretty impressive. He's done just about everything there is to do in the motorsports world. And again, I'm just very privileged to know the guy and to, you know. So I see him at SEMA every year, at this point, and we don't get enough time to spend together, but we always get a chance to BS for a little while. Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up. Uh-huh. So what's the status on the Pontiac for the GTO you're working on?
Well, the engine, I don't know. I think the engine was at the machine shop when we spoke last, but I went out to visit him. The engine was, most of the machine work was all done. It was on the line hone machine, the main hone machine, when I was there, and they were honing up the main caps, and everything else was done, and we're at the point where we're starting to order parts and gonna start putting things together pretty soon. It was about two weeks ago when I was out there, and like I said, they were honing it up, and it looked fantastic. And God, this guy just does such great work, and I wish I could spend all damn day there. And I just love machine shops. I mean, it appeals to every part of my OCD nature just to see all this precise machine work and watch it all happen. And this guy is even worse than me. I mean, they measure things down to the 10,000th of an inch for clearances, and so it's going to be done right.
After doing the machine work, he was happy with the condition of the block.
Yeah, he says it's a great looking block. It's in good shape and everything cleaned up nice. I had some corrosion in one of the cylinders, and he just had to do a 5/1000ths overbore on it to get everything cleaned up. And he decked the surfaces and put new cam bearings in, got a special order some pistons with a special dish so I can run it with my stock heads, and because it's going to be stroked out to 4 1/4 inches.
Nice.
Yeah, it'll be a 10-to-1 compression ratio, and just got to pick up a spec out of cam on it still. And we got the rods all specced out and the crankshaft specced out, and should hopefully in the next couple weeks start coming together.
So, that's cool.
Yeah, so then the ball is going to be in my court. I got to get all the other stuff ready. I got to get the engine bay cleaned up and get the wiring harness and all that stuff. So that's
Are you going to have him do the bottom end assembly, or are you going to put it together?
Yeah, I'm going to have him assemble the short block just because he has all the measuring devices, and I want to make sure all the clearances are perfect. And otherwise I'd be using plastic gauge, and I'd be second guessing myself all the time, and such a nutcase about that kind of stuff. I just want it to be perfect, 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 and he'll only have to do it once, and I know he'll do it right, so I'm letting him do it. So I'm not that much of a control freak where I have to do everything myself when it comes to that. So,
well, again, when you're footing the bill on it, you don't want to have to do this again if something doesn't go right.
No doubt. No doubt. So,
have you thought about a cam yet?
I have thought about it. He went through a catalog, I think a Comp Cams catalog, and pointed out a few ones that he thought would work well for me. And, another guy on the, that I've been kind of going back and forth with on the, Performance Years, forums has suggested the, SD Performance has the, Stump Puller cam that seems to be really good, or the, what's the other one called? Not the Stump Puller, but the Old Faithful, which is a little more aggressive. It has a higher RPM range than I think I'll need. It's like 2,500 to 6,000 RPM is the operational range. That's a little high for me, especially it'll probably be living more in the lower RPM range. So maybe that Stump Puller might be good. It's a little more mild, but it's a good roller cam. And a lot of guys.
Oh, you're doing a roller.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. I have the 068 cam, the Melling 068 cam that I was going to use, and I have lifters for it and everything. But just something in the back of my head nags at me that I'm going to wipe a cam lobe out again, and have to go through all over again. I'll never be comfortable, and I know it. So
yeah,
I figured, you know what? It's more money. Do it the right way the first time. Don't cheap out, or just make yourself happy. So I'm making myself happy,
and that's the way to do it. You know, the purpose of this car is to make you happy.
Yeah, first absolutely. Of all. I don't want to cringe every time I turn the key, thinking that something's going to go wrong.
Yeah, and that little voice is not in the back of your head. That should be front and center.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Because we've had, it sucks because. There's all the stories about what happens with a flat tappet camshaft when they go bad. And, there was a story on the lifters being made at an overseas facility and they weren't that great, or the cams weren't being hardened to a certain spec, or the zinc additive was gone from the oil, and all these factors, right? Which at the end of the day, I don't care what the factors are. I just know that when we fire up a flat tappet cam, which we try to never do again, but when we have, We've taken every precaution from the cam manufacturer, from the lifter manufacturer, from engine builders. Mm-hmm. We use additives. We do everything.
Right.
And you're still nervous.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be so stressful.
Well, the one that really kind of bit us was the Pontiac motor, believe it or not, in the Rowdy Firebird we did a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Ram Air 4 cam, you know, kind of a reproduction stock grind on a flat tappet. And the engine was built by a very reputable Pontiac guy in Wisconsin.
Right.
And the engine came to us assembled, essentially, and ready to go. We did some detail work on it.
Right.
And we did the full-on textbook break-in. And we broke it in with a carburetor. That car ended up being fuel injection, but I don't want to introduce the variables of EFI tuning on an engine break-in.
Right.
So, and I like to go so far as to make sure those float bowls are full of fuel. You know, we're not using the tank in the back and sucking it up all the way. We're making
right.
sure we got fuel instantly. Mm-hmm. We make sure that the thing is timed correctly before we fire it. We've got the engine oil and zinc additives in place. The cam was properly lubed with, Moly lubricant and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it lit right off and did a perfect textbook break-in, the half hour varying from 2,000 to 2,500 RPM.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't get hot. It had great oil pressure. It was dynamite.
Yeah.
And after the car was finished and had, 1,000 miles on it, the cam went flat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my nightmare. Right? What was the situation right there? Ugh.
So Steve Prouty, the owner of that car at the time, ended up pulling the motor and doing a roller conversion on it. And then, worries are over.
Worries are over. Exactly. Exactly. I learned from his bad luck and my own.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had Chevy Motors do it. And you see crate motors every once in a while do it, so nobody's immune. You can't point the finger at an engine builder or whatever.
Right.
Everybody's in it together. So.
Yeah, I mean, I even went to the point where I went and got High Lift Johnson lifters, which is an American-made lifter, which is known to have a really great reputation. And the 068 cam has kind of a lazy lift profile, and it's, supposed to be good for, for flat tappets. And still... It's, I think, no, I can't do it. Can't do it. So
yeah.
I won't put myself through that again. This
yeah,
has been
well,
a long time. This has been a 2-year ordeal for Pete's sake. So I don't want to, I need to drive this car again, not just look at it.
Right. Well, that's good. So you're kind of turning a corner, hopefully, by getting the machine work done and pretty soon be able to start putting that motor back together.
Oh, yeah. So hopefully, like I said, my goal is before the snow flies again to be driving it. So we'll see.
Yeah, which the weather we have right now, the last thing I'm thinking about is snow, but it'll be here before we know it, unfortunately.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, we've had a great spring and summer so far. I've been really happy with this one.
Yeah. It's been a little hot down here, but it's nice this weekend.
Yeah,
just a lot of rain.
Yeah, I'll take that over 20 below any day. I'll take a little heat.
Well, speaking of heat, the earlier this year, we had finished up the ZR9 Camaro and sent it to its owner, who lives in the Middle East.
Right.
And you want to talk about some heat.
We
were learning to hear how the car survived the transoceanic transport process and then how he liked it because he had never seen the car in person.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, it was an interesting deal. He had contacted us because he'd watched some of our videos online and said, hey, I want you to build a Camaro. So that's how we did the whole thing. We'd met him in person at the SEMA show in Vegas a few years ago, but he had never actually seen the car.
Oh, wow.
The whole time we built it, outside of photographs. And we do have some customers around the world that's how we deal with them. We just send them pictures and videos and stuff. But I'll tell you what... the second most nervous thing next to a flat tappet cam is loading a car onto a transport and hoping it's going to get where it's supposed to go in one piece.
Oh, man. I can't even imagine.
Especially something of that level. It was a very, very nice car that had a lot of cool stuff that was, kind of hand-done. So we were pretty confident when it left our front door because we used reliable transport and they've got a great reputation and we've had real good success with those guys to take it to the coast. But then it got put in a container and then it went overseas that way. And no kidding, as soon as we send this car, somebody posts a thing on Facebook about Ducati motorcycles losing 185 bikes that fell into the ocean because a container ship listed.
Oh.
So the good news is the car made it. It had a couple of things, little details, a couple scratches, and a couple things that, like, for example, on a 69 Camaro, there's no interior hood latch. The hood latch is under the hood and the grill out in front.
Uh-huh.
But in this particular car, we had installed an interior hood latch underneath the dash just because we had air to, you know, charge coolers and the AC and everything underneath the nose of this car. It was easier to put an internal release than to try and rework the original one around all that other stuff.
Sure.
And one of the, I guess one of the idiosyncrasies of this car is that when you'd pull this handle inside the car, the hood didn't just fly up like a new car. It would subtly lift a little bit, and then you'd have to go out and pick it up.
Uh-huh.
And that was just the way the things worked.
Right.
But when the car arrived in the Middle East, that handle under the hood or under the dash had been basically ripped off.
So really?
Somebody in the transport process had to see under the hood and yanked on that thing, you know, to try and get to the hood to pop and didn't know how it worked and broke it, you know. So.
Oh, man. But come on, people.
By and large, it survived, you know, pretty well. And the owner had to do a couple little things, but he was happy with the car. And he was saying that he was only driving it at night because it's like, you know, 127 or 130 degrees ambient. I mean, you were over there. You know
what
it's like.
I know what he's talking about, baby. It's like it's like a oven door blast in the face when you walk outside.
Holy so, and I've never been, but I know that our mission was to try and build a car that had over 800 horsepower with a supercharger and air conditioning and all this stuff that had to stay functional in that heat level.
Wow.
But he's smart about it, and he's, you know, driving at night when it's down to, you know, 100, I guess, or 110 or something.
Right.
And the one fun story that he relayed is that he hadn't put a whole lot of miles on it because he's been traveling, but he's already crossed 260 kilometers an hour with it, which was about 161 miles an hour.
All right.
So, yes, he's driving it, which I love to see.
Yeah, for sure. That's a pretty car.
Yeah, it was. The guys did a tremendous job on the paint and body crew. Everybody did in the shop on that thing. I mean, yeah.
That was a long-term project, too, wasn't it? That was going for a while.
It was, and some of that was availability of certain things. Mm-hmm. Some of it was project, you know, the typical scope creep here and there.
Right.
Where we'd get an email saying, hey, let's change this and go a different direction because a newer thing came out, you know, that he wanted to try and that kind of thing.
Right.
But overall, it's fun when they match the rendering picture, you know, when you have a design in the beginning and it looks just like it at the end.
Yeah,
you know,
that is pretty cool.
It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the top speed, I don't know what RPM he was at when he hit 160, and I don't know what kind of road surface he was on. I don't think it was a track. I think it was a road, which I don't recommend.
Oh,
but
no,
that's
no doubt.
A testament to the Detroit speed suspension when you take a 50-year-old car design and push it that fast and it stays on course.
Yeah, that's good.
And then, you know, a testament to the guys that put the nuts and bolts together to make sure they stayed tight. So it's cool.
Yeah, holy cow, no doubt. What we got? Any good stuff? I mean, it's all good stuff. But any noteworthy stuff coming up on the Brothers Collection for Muscle Car of the Week?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the last time we talked, I had hinted at kind of a double tie-in with the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals.
Right.
There's it's been made official. There's going to be a special appearance by Bobby Unser at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals. Yeah, and Bobby will be there, sitting next to a very special car, which happens to be in the Brothers collection and will be featured on Muscle Car of the Week. And what we're talking about here is a 1969 Ford Torino. Ooh. That Bobby Unser raced the Pikes Peak hill climb in 69.
Really?
And the cool thing about this car is that it was kind of backwards. A lot of these things were built by race shops and then, you know, powered by Ford or whatnot. This time, the car itself was built in conjunction with Holman Moody and Ford. And the engine is a Smokey Unic built 429 Ooh. Boss motor, right?
Wow. So
the car was built, from what I understand, to a price tag of about $300,000 back in 1969.
Holy cow.
And the only thing it ever did was race Pikes Peak in 69, and it was parked, and that was it.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. Because the whole – oh, yeah, could you imagine? So the landscape of racing was very fluid in the late 60s and early 70s. We started to see some corporate mandates of companies getting out of racing and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So Ford was still going real strong when they started that program, but they kind of petered out afterwards. Uh-huh. So the car never got used, and I believe it either won its division or set a record there at Pikes Peak.
By God, it better have. I was just going to ask you, it better have won, for Pete's sake. $300,000 in 1969 dollars for not to win? Holy cow.
Yeah, right, for a factory
back
team.
That'll make you quit.
Yes, yeah, totally. But the coolest thing is, Bobby took his helmet off and he took his gloves off, and you know, he shoved his gloves in the roll bar between the door and the roll bar, and he put his mask and goggles over on the other seat, and he got out of it, and that was it. Well, today those gloves are still stuffed in the door.
What? Come on, really?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
And his goggles are still in the car.
Holy cow.
And the motor is untouched, and that was one of the ways that the organizers of the McCacken show convinced them to come out, because they said, you know, the Brothers Collection had this car, and they've had it for a few years, and there's been kind of a grand plan to maybe get an interview with Unser about the car and learn the story, you know, firsthand. And they contacted Unser and said, hey, we have an old car that you raced. Would you be willing to go to Chicago for the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals in November and you know, be there and sign autographs or whatever? Uh-huh. And he's like, yeah, sure. You know, I hear that all the time. You know, I raced a lot of old cars, you know, whatever. And he didn't think it was, you know, perhaps a legit car.
Right.
And when they told him that they had his gloves, he went, yeah, what are the dates? I'll be there.
Wow.
So, He remembers the car vividly and really liked the car and had a great time on that race. And I don't know if you've ever seen any footage or experienced the Pikes Peak race, but it is a hair-raising event.
Oh, I've seen a couple of a little bit of that on TV before, and that looks like some pretty death-defying hair-raising stuff. Exactly. Holy shnikes.
Yes, you know, you're on the cliffs and it's a dirt road and you're going as fast as you can uphill, and it's up, you know, I don't even remember what the elevation change is. And there's a story that we're going to try and so here's where we come in. You asked about Muscle Car of the Week.
Yeah.
We have an interview slated with Unser about this event at the show in Chicago. And the rumor is that Mario Andretti was supposed to drive this thing initially. Ford had been working with Andretti, and they thought he'd be a good driver for this race. And the story that we are going to try and confirm is that Unser took Andretti up the course in like a station wagon or something, and they got to the top and Andretti said, you're crazy, I'm not driving this.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah, right, exactly. And if he says it's nuts, you know, that gives you an idea.
Yeah. Oh my Lord.
So the car is red, white, and blue, and it's I don't think much has happened to it. It had been kind of buried in a museum somewhere for a lot of years. It's just kind of a sideshow display, and it's been resurrected. And the Brothers Collection have a couple of guys that manage the cars on a hands-on basis.
Sure.
And they've been, you know, figuring out the right way to approach starting this car and running it, because I'm not sure we know when the last time it ran, and it's believed that Smokey Unick was the last guy to turn a wrench on this engine.
Well, holy shit! Wow.
Yeah. Huh. So it's a historic thing, you know. It's like all of a sudden you're Indiana Jones and you have to respect the history of this thing and not disturb anything. But
no doubt.
Everybody wants to hear it run.
Yeah. So I want to hear it run.
No, me too. Yeah. So they're trying to figure out, you know, exactly what it might need, and there's some notes that say maybe it lost a head gasket or something when it was running. So they're trying to figure out the best way to document this whole process, maybe take as a little apart as they can. But on the flip side, there's another thought to run it without any coolant, you know, and just fire it up and move it around a little bit and not have to worry about a functioning cooling system, you know,
right,
for sake
yeah.
of not taking this thing apart, you know.
Sure. Huh. Wow. 429 Torino running up Pikes Peak. That would be a sight.
Yes,
it's pretty
insane. And we've obtained some footage of that event.
Oh,
and when we do our feature on that car, on Muscle Car of the Week, we will include all that stuff to show this thing actually running back in the day and hopefully now as well. So
nice.
The other neat one is we've got photos. The Brothers Collection is also home to a 429 Cobra, which was the Torino street car for 69. If you went and bought, you went down to your Ford dealer and bought the baddest 69 Torino you could buy, it would come with a 429, which was definitely not the boss 429. It was just a regular 429.
Okay.
And we've got some pictures of those two cars nose to nose, so you can see how many differences the Holman Moody guys and the Ford guys did to turn this into a race car, and it's unbelievable. Yeah,
sweet.
It's fun
oh,
stuff.
Oh, that'll be nice to see. That McCacken show, that's a must see show too. I never miss that.
Yeah,
it'll be great to see that there.
And it's a chance to meet Bobby Unser himself. So
pretty
cool.
For sure. Is he going to be Is he going to be there both days, or is he going to just be there on Saturday? Do we know what his schedule is?
I would say check the website at mcacn.com, and they'll probably publish that. I don't know if his travel arrangements have been made yet.
Okay.
I should probably know that because I got to be there when he's there to get this task done of hanging out with him.
Yeah,
you know,
that
twist
would be
my
helpful.
Arm. Yeah, but knowing me, I'll miss it, and then I'll be like, "Yeah, that was a great opportunity you blew there, dummy."
Oh my gosh.
But before that, we'll be at the CarCraft Summer Nationals in Milwaukee, which is not next weekend but the following, the 16th, 17th, 18th of July, I believe.
Oh, cool.
Kind of doing our public unveiling of the Cop Cams Camaro that we're working on. So
oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not too far from you. I don't know if you got time
no,
to buzz
not
up to Milwaukee.
Far from me. That's like an hour and a half away from me.
Yeah, that's a pretty good event. Again, we're very fortunate to be involved in to have been invited to be there in the Pro Builders thing. You know, between you and I think we're often largely outclassed there next to Rad Rides and Ring Brothers and Roadster Shop and a lot of, you know, way over the top cars. So again, we're lucky just to be there. But the Cop Cams Camaro is a pretty cool car. It's something that's still identifiable to a regular enthusiast. It's not, you know, all CNC made, and it's not a $1 million build. It's still a real Camaro that just happens to be powered and propelled by, you know, the entire Cop Cams and Fast XFI and TCI product catalog. So it's a 454 cubic inch LS engine using an RHS aftermarket block, which Comp makes. Their cylinder heads, full roller drive line.
Right.
It was built by Butler LS, who's, you know, Butler, your favorite Pontiac engine builder, Butler Performance.
Yeah, I heard they just got into the LS game recently. They made an announcement about that, so that's great.
Yeah, and they certainly have brought over a wealth of engine building secrets that they've been sitting on and applied them to the LS stuff, because those guys definitely know what they're doing. And Rodney Butler put this engine together, and It's a naturally aspirated 11-to-1 compression motor that made 691 horsepower at 6,800 RPM.
Wow.
And the RPM, and the curves were both still going up at that point.
Holy cow. And that's a 454 cubic inch engine?
Yes, with no power adder, just pump gas, 11-to-1, and it made 680-some foot-pounds. At about 4,300, so it will make this this little Camaro go down the street.
Oh, you know, yeah, it'll scoot. That's for sure.
Huh? Yeah, and if we play our cards right, we'll be maybe running the autocross a little bit with that car. But I got to see. Got a few things left to do.
Yeah.
Namely, the alignment's going to be a little tricky on this one to get it, you know, happy and safe enough. We haven't really driven the car much yet, and the clock's ticking. So we'll see if
What kind of steering system? Is it like a stock Camaro steering, or is it rack and pinion, or what you put in there?
That is a Heights front subframe, so it's a full aftermarket steering and suspension. It is a rack and pinion, power rack and pinion with big Wilwood brakes and a Hydroboost system. The rear suspension is a Heights bolt-in four-link. Again, what Comp's mission was for this car is they didn't really want an over-the-top show car. They wanted something that they could, you know, fairly affordably build and get behind the wheel and drive on, you know, any event they wanted. So that Heights four-link was pretty interesting. A regular guy can do it in a weekend easily.
That's great.
Of course, the front suspension all bolts together, and that's not anything super complex either.
Right.
And it sits right. It looks good. It's on CCW wheels, you know, coilover shocks all the way around, and big sway bars front and rear, Panhard bar in the back.
Sure.
And Adam Schulte, our fabricator, was able to snake a 3-inch mandrel bent Magnaflow exhaust system all the way through that four link and out the back with no problem.
Wow.
So, there was
that's
good,
talent.
Good room
that's talent
there.
Right there.
It's talent, absolutely. Wow. You know, stuff that I can't do, so I'm glad he can.
Yeah, I can't either.
Yeah, so, and the car is, you know, it's bright white with black stripes up the hood and deck, but with a red outlining pinstripe to echo the Comp Cam's logo. A lot of neat tricks. There's a good build thread on our website about that one, and we'll end up doing probably, I'm going to say, at least 3 full episodes of V8 TV and building that car start to finish. So we haven't released any of that video yet because I basically want to finish the car and then we'll start putting all that stuff together. But that'll be still towards the end of the summer.
Uh-huh.
You'll start seeing that video.
Now,
so we're excited about that.
When you say 3 full episodes, is that the stuff that you put out on Revan, and or is that stuff that'll be on the website?
That's going to be everywhere. It'll be on Revan. It'll be on Tough TV in the standard half-hour television broadcast episodes, and then it will be the individual chapters will be on the website on V8 TV.
Okay.
And on YouTube and Facebook and all that stuff. And we're also doing a full-length DVD of the whole build. And again, if the you know, sometimes I hate to say this stuff because if it doesn't come out right, then, you know, I'm the jerk. But at the end of August, we're having our drive-in cruise event at the local Belleville, Illinois Skyview Drive-In, which is a fun event. We rent the drive-in theater, and we have a car show and show a cool classic car movie. We're going to show Bullet this year with you know, Steve McQueen and the Mustang and the Charger. And we plan on showing that whole Comp Cam's video there.
Oh, cool.
But my other production team members are probably going to kick me in the head for saying that because there's
a bunch
of work. Yeah, a bunch of work to do. But we'll be all hands on deck for that. But I think that'd be a fun special to watch.
Yeah, it'd be a nice pre-feature.
The big feature.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, the drive-in normally does a double feature. But we're doing this on a Thursday night, so people don't want to be out till 2 in the morning, you know, so we'll do something shorter.
I gotcha.
Yeah, the other fun thing on that drive-in cruise, the proprietor of the drive-in says that he can basically fit 400 cars in comfortably, and everybody can see the main screen. He can put probably 600 cars in and utilize two screens because it's a two-screen drive-in. Last year, we had about 230 cars, I'm going to say, 230, 240. So it was comfortable. It was a good-sized crowd. This year, we released the info, and everybody who went last year has been telling their friends, which is great, and we have 580 that are interested in going at this point.
Whoa.
Now, that's just interested. You know, we've sold, I'm going to say we're over 100 tickets sold already, and I'm encouraging people to go to the driveincruise.com website and pre-purchase because, A, you're going to get a ticket, and B, it's going to be easier to get in. You don't have to wait in line and do a transaction and all that stuff. You can just cruise right in. But we were wondering what happens if we, you know, if we go beyond that 400 car thing, it'd be an awesome show. So we'll see.
Yeah. That'd be a cool problem to have.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, I guess we'll show it on two screens, you know, that's what you do. So
why not? One screen is good. Two screens are better.
That's right. Well, I think, we've covered quite a lot of ground on this episode.
Yes, we have.
It's been good to catch up. Yeah. And I appreciate you perpetuating the cool song Friday on the website.
Oh, you bet. I missed it Friday. I got to throw something up there today. Gosh, dang it.
Well, make it a busy day. You know, patriotic themed. We're on 4th of July weekend here, so let's find something good.
I'll look for something good, absolutely.
Right on.
All right, right on, man. Good talking to you again.
It's always a pleasure, and for all the stuff, if you're listening somewhere and you want to see more of all the stuff that Mike and I have been BSing about, you can go to the VATVShow.com website or MuscleCarTheWeek.com or V8SpeedShop.com. And you started your build thread on the Pontiac, and we're waiting for an update, man. I'll get to bust your balls a little bit.
Yeah, I'll get that update right out, right away. Right away, I promise. I thought about that yesterday, and as a matter of fact, I'm like, oh, my God, I haven't updated that yet. Shoot.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm beyond blue over here. You know.
All right. I understand.
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks again for being on, and we will catch you next time on V8 Radio.